It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Violet Brown driving.
Now it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Game on lock for sure.
It is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on Gasper and Murray, but there's no Murray today. It's Matt McCarthy in for Big Jim. 617-779-0985. We'll definitely be bringing Sean Silver and Brian Robb in as well. Both big-time hoop heads. Sure you're familiar with their work. If you're not, you should familiarize yourself with their work. Brian Robb from the Boston Sports Journal. Sean Silver does a great Celtics notebook for 98.5thesportshub.com. Check it out. Two of the big hoop heads at the station. Chris Gasper, pretty damn good on hoops as well. And I'm just the baseball guy here to facilitate the discussion. So I'm going to start off by facilitating the discussion in this way. 10-1. Celtics have won 10 in a row. Do you guys see this coming? I mean, because I didn't. I mean, you know, particularly after that opening night loss to Philly. And I understand that, you know, not all of these games have been particularly difficult. I expected them to get off to a good start this season. But they've been impressive. I mean, this is some noteworthy stuff here. And last night was not great and last night was ugly. But sometimes you got to win games like that in the NBA. I'm surprised by the 10-1 start. You guys surprised by it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised by it. And I'll just say quickly, I look at last night. They didn't play their best, but in a way, it's really encouraging because to me, that's the sign of a championship right. contender, a great team. They can turn it on when they have to get enough to get the win. And that's exactly what the Celtics did. And I think there were times last year where they weren't able to do that or they tried to do it too much. Where I would get concerned is if they start thinking they can do this all the time, because even though they're better than I thought they were, best record in the NBA, 10-1. You can do that against the Warriors because the Warriors, this is like mind-blowing to say, but if you're watching the NBA, you know they are the worst team in the NBA.
They're awful.
Because of the injury situation and what's happened there and how depleted they are. So you can get away with this a little bit, and I found it encouraging that they did. I just don't want it to become a habit.
So they picked a good night to have a bad night. You know, against the worst team in the NBA, the start of a road trip. I mean, there is a letdown factor to that game. You're kicking off a tough West Coast swing. It's the first game of that swing. You just traveled. You're going up against the worst team in the NBA. Like, you can sort of see a letdown game. That's in some ways a trap game because, you know, I'll say this about the Warriors. They don't have the talent, but at least they still have the coaching, the effort. There is a compete level with that team that you can at least admire and you can at least respect. And we saw that last night, and that's basically the first thing that Brad Stevens said. I mean, that Alec Burks guy, like, I don't even know who he is. Like, people were telling me that he played for Utah.
Yeah, he played for Utah. Yeah. He went to College of Colorado.
Right, and he killed the Celtics last night. So that's the point that the Warriors are at. Silver, you were up watching the game. You were one of those people. I was here last night till about 2 a.m. I thought that was an encouraging sign for the Celtics last night that they were able to win that game because letdowns like that will happen in the NBA. They were able to overcome it. They were able to withstand it. To Chris's point, you don't want to make a habit out of it, but good teams win games like that, and I thought that was a good sign for the Celtics.
Right. You want to keep the streak going because in terms of being surprised about this start, I definitely am. I have my concerns, and you know, I've kind of laid them out. I hit on them, sort of check in on them every week when I do a C's notebook for the website. You know, bench scoring. Again, you didn't get it last night.
Nothing.
You know, what's going to happen with the big men from night to night? That's definitely something that you need to keep an eye on. But right now in the East, you know, the Celtics have responded to the Hayward injury with 3.5, you know, consecutive wins at this point, which is great. And you have teams around you who, you know, the Sixers, I won't say they're imploding necessarily, But they're facing injury concerns. Toronto's missing Kyle Lowry. Milwaukee's missing Chris Middleton. And that's kind of just the tip of the iceberg in terms of NBA injuries right now. So for the Celtics to take an injury of their own, you know, to have starting players, I mean, their starting five right now is masterful. They didn't have the most crisp or efficient night last night. But, again, you need to be able to pile up wins at this point in the season. Christmas time, you get Gordon Hayward back, and hopefully, you know, you're still the number one seed in the East at that point. That's really all that you can do right now until it's the proving ground of the playoffs.
You know what I take away from these first 11 games is that the Celtics do have enough top-level talent to be a NBA Finals contender.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think people kind of question that. It's like, okay, well, you lose Kyrie Irving, and he's supposed to be that A number one on a championship-level team. The Celtics have, you know, four or five, you know, their starting five is as good as you get in the NBA right now.
From a talent perspective.
At least, and statistically, they're second in the NBA in starting 5 points. My question with this team comes in with the role guys, and it comes in with the big men. Like, are you going to have somebody who can at least hold his own against Horford and Embiid in a playoff series? Mm-hmm. Or are they going to be able to stop Giannis? Are they going to be able to be, you know, to match up with teams at the end of the year? But the top level talent on this team, which I think some questioned entering the, you know, listen, you know, we still don't know what to make of Brown and Tatum and, you know, ultimately what their ceiling is. And, you know, is Kemba Walker, you know, was he just a volume scorer in Charlotte? The top level talent on this team is damn good. It is. The question is, the role guys, are they going to be able to find players who can come in and, you know, and you know, give them scoring off the bench or give them defense in the front court? And those questions have not been answered in the first 11 games. And frankly, I don't think they will be answered until April or May.
Yeah, I think there's some legitimacy to that. I do think some of the, like, for me, Brad Wanamaker has stepped up.
He was really good in the first half last night.
Brad Stevens talked about him on Wednesday night with Grandy in the pregame interview before that Wizards game and just talked about, hey, it's not easy being the guy who you're not sure is going to play, but we really trust Brad Wanamaker. He's reliable. He's smart. So I like what I've seen from him. I think rebounding and rim protection are going to be questions for this team probably all year based on who their bigs are. My question in terms of the bench scoring thing, which I think is a great point by Sean, I think that you can solve that problem, but it takes one of these guys being willing to take a different role and a step back. Because when I look at this team, outside of maybe the Charlotte game, where I think Kemba was a little bit sort of on edge with the return and everything, and his shots weren't falling, it's like, when have you had all of the wings healthy and out there firing at the same time? Because for me, and I said this yesterday in Felger and Maz, right now it's working because it feels like a relay race. Like Jaylen Brown's down. It's like, okay, Gordon Hayward gets to do his thing with Tatum. It's like, okay, now Gordon Hayward broke his hand. Now Jaylen Brown scored 20 points in 4 straight games. But what's it going to be like when everybody's healthy and everybody's sort of looking for their shots? Is there going to be somebody that says, yeah, I'll be the guy that comes off the bench and I might score 14 instead of 20, but that's better for this team and that's what this team needs, because that's what they didn't have last year. And we'll really find out if that was just a Kyrie issue or was that an issue with too much ambition from certain guys or certain guys feeling like they've earned a certain place in the NBA when maybe they haven't at this point on this team.
Right. And what you're getting from a talent standpoint of those four, you know, you could probably call them all-star caliber players at this point, at least the way that they're playing. They've done everything that you know, you'd asked of them in the offseason in terms of, you know, making their games. You know, we're seeing the best version of Jason Tatum in terms of attacking. We are seeing the best version of Jaylen Brown in terms of, you know, development on both ends of the floor. We're seeing the best version of Kemba as a leader. We're seeing the best version of Hayward when he's healthy, just as a we were seeing the best version of Hayward.
Now you were right
as a healthy NBA player. So, you know, that's a little crowded.
But have we seen it all together?
Exactly. And you don't need all four of those guys to score 25 in the same game. So, yeah, are two guys going to be okay sitting back? Is one guy going to be okay sitting back? In the meantime, you've seen Marcus Smart playing the best basketball of his career. And, you know, that's not basically just the dimensionality that a three-point game gives him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's played great defense, and people it's been really hard to look past the fact that he can't shoot, you know, for 4.5 seasons out of his career. Now what he's done in the last year and a half is really making Marcus Smart, arguably. It's kind of like when they had the big three, Garnett, Pierce, and Allen, and people were like, well, Rondo's in there too.
Sure.
Marcus Smart is a lot of nights really reaching the status of being an A player on this team. So it's a best case scenario, but it's, again, it's balancing all those personalities.
Steve in Medford wants to talk about Marcus Smart. Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys. How are we doing?
What's up?
I wanted to call specifically just on Marcus Smart. And, Chris, I think this question might be for you because you might have insight on this thing. So I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it today, but Marcus held that really cool charity event with the bowling stuff. And it kind of got me thinking, like, how come Marcus hasn't been named captain yet? Is this something that the Celtics are trying to move away from? Because if I'm – correct me if I'm wrong, I think the last guy that was named captain was Rondo, and they haven't had one since. And I just feel like the players love him, young guys love him, older guys love him, Brad loves him. I just feel like it makes sense for him to be named captain, and I'm just wondering – why that hasn't happened yet. I don't know if, Chris, you have insight on that.
I don't have any insight as to why he hasn't been named captain. I think that, you know, maybe they feel that sort of the idea of sort of anointing someone, I think when you do that, that can sort of come with a certain amount of, I don't want to say entitlement, but maybe expectations, either regarding playing time or that, you know, normally, like in the NBA, you do need guys that are solid leaders from a personality standpoint. You know, your leaders don't always have to be your best players, but one of your best players has to be one of your leaders. And so I think they'd rather have the thing develop organically than just sort of, we all know that Marcus Smart is a lead by example guy and he's fiery. We all know that he's the longest tenured Celtic at this point. I'm not sure they have to slap the C on him. And I think that would maybe just make it harder for other guys, particularly maybe the young players, to sort of interact with him.
617-779-0985. No Big Jim Murray today. It's Matt McCarthy, Chris Gasper, and Sean Silver as the Sports Hub Celtics show rolls on here on this Saturday.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ball's in the air.
Oh, good
steal.
And Tatum
steals the jump, goes in and flushes with the right hand. And he wanted a foul call on Draymond Green. He stepped in front of Draymond after Cauley Stein won the jump ball. Celtics had the lead. Jason Tatum makes a big play. 90 seconds to go right now. Boston by one.
You know, to your point, Chris, great teams and good teams have the ability to elevate themselves in moments like that. And that was in some ways one of the first signs we've seen from the Celtics this year that they're capable of that. I mean, they struggled all night long. Jason Tatum, I thought, was killing them in the offensive end for much of that fourth quarter. But he makes that play, a great hustle play.
Great play.
He follows it up with that nice little follow-away jumper at the foul line. Has a good defensive play in that sequence as part of that 10-0 run late in the fourth quarter. That was a great sequence from Jason Tatum. He elevated his play. The Celtics elevated their play, and that's why they won the game.
So did you guys see that Smart actually coached him make that play?
That's what Silver was pointing out.
So
you two can nerd out on your little basketball thing here. So,
yeah,
so
Marcus
Smart basically told Jason Tatum what to do on that play?
Pretty much. And so he was telling this to Abby Chin on NBC Sports Boston after the game. But you can see in the clip before Tatum makes the play, before the jump ball, that he's walking over to Tatum and whispering some things to him. And then immediately Tatum goes, you know, pretty much telling him to jump the spot. Cauley Stein's going to win the tip here. Mm-hmm. They're just going to hit it back. So if you just sprint back there, beam to the ball, you're going to get a layup. And lo and behold, that's what happened.
That's great. I mean, that's why you appreciate Marcus Smart. I think it's, you know, great play by Tatum on the execution. And, you know, there's an element of chemistry to that. And that's the biggest thing for me this year. I feel like the Celtics are sort of back to being the Celtics, mm-hmm. right? It's back to what I call Brad ball. It's doing the little things, making plays like that, sharing the basketball, you know, having sort of a team culture. And I think that's also made this 10-game winning streak enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics for a while, by, you know, some people who may be associated with this program, were known as the Bridgies. Mm-hmm. And there was a sense of they were opportunistic. They cashed in on opportunities, whether it was out-of-bounds plays, whether it was steals in key moments, whether it was a key charge being taken. You know, I looked back recently. I was just kind of like, what were the memorable wins for the Celtics last year? And I'm sure there were some, but, you know, it's not the same as going back to, like, I remember there was a Rockets game where they were, like, down 26 a couple
sure.
of years
yeah,
ago. Marcus Smart takes a charge from James Harden. And it was just like they got away from that. And again, you don't win championships by being plucky. But they got away from kind of the fun, like, execution-oriented Celtics to just, we are going to ISO, and our talented point guard is going to hit a shot over your best defender. And that's basically what the Nets are doing in every fourth quarter this year.
And they're 4-7?
You can ask them how it's working out for them. But in the fourth quarter, again, and I'm not saying this Celtics team isn't talented, that they're justified by being plucky and making the best out of opportunities. But when you combine top-level talent, somebody like a Tatum who, you know, can make a steal like that, it isn't just going to go back and lay it in, but come down for a thunderous dunk and, you know, beat a couple of guys to the basket. Someone like a Kemba Walker who's just going to say, all right, I've been cold. I'm just going to take over. But it's smart basketball. Again, it's opportunistic basketball. It's fun basketball. It's not just ISOs all over the place.
But this is my point, Sean. You know, my takeaway from the first 11 games of the year is the high-end talent on this team is good enough. It is championship quality, which, you know, I think some people question entering the year. I think the question with this team is the role players, the bench scoring, the big men. But that's easier to find. That's easier to find. So, you know, people were saying, well, you know, they're going to go back to being the Bridgies. They're going to go back to being competitive and plucky, and it'll be enjoyable, and you know, but they're not going
to
be a championship.
But we still have to see how they match up in a playoff series, though, because here's the one thing I will say. I think the talent is better, and to Sean's point, you know, about when we talked about the Bridgies, and they are back, I think, from a culture standpoint to where they were before, but with more talent. But the issue is they will be smarter and try harder during the regular season than other teams. But the issue in the past would be they get into the playoffs, and at some point you run into somebody that has more talent than you, and it now says it's the playoffs, and now they're trying harder too. And so I think the question for me at this point is how much growth is there for this team? I still think there's a lot. I think there is high-end talent on this team. But I can't just sort of declare, like, I don't want to overreact to the regular season, because we know that Brad Stevens' teams are normally very, very good regular season teams. They're better prepared. They share the ball. They play harder on a night-to-night basis than a lot of other teams. But when you get into the postseason, all that stuff gets leveled out. The other coach is just focused on you, so that gets leveled out. The other team's playing for their livelihood, so they're playing as hard as you. That gets leveled out.
I would just say this. I think, you know, when we compare this team to the teams of a few years ago, you could always say, well, they don't have the talent of a Cleveland or, you know, of the top teams in the East. You can make the argument that the Celtics have as much high-end talent as any of those teams in the Eastern Conference. Now, to your point, Chris, you know, when you get into the playoffs and, well, you do have the right matchup. And, you know, maybe they don't have the right matchup against Philadelphia because they don't have the big men. Or maybe their, you know, their lack of bench scoring is going to catch up to them in the end in a certain matchup that they would encounter in April or May. I just think it's easier to find those matchup players. It's easier to find, you know, a big man who can defend or somebody who can give you scoring off the bench than finding this legitimate top-end talent. That's the hardest thing to find in the NBA. And the Celtics lost Kyrie Irving, but I feel like they have enough legitimate high-end talent to be an NBA Finals contender. And it's easier to find those smaller little pieces that might help you win a matchup against Philadelphia or win a matchup against Milwaukee or win a series against those teams. It's easier to find those little pieces that make a difference in an even matchup than it is to find high-end talent. And I think that's why the Celtics are in a damn good position moving forward.
They lost Kyrie Irving and Al Horford.
That's the big thing.
I'm not
Horford's
saying,
still the big loss.
You know, Al Horford isn't a 20-10 player, you know, by any assessment there, but he is an all-star player, and he was a player that helped them win. This was a team that was set up to fractured. I mean, they already were fractured last year, but just in terms of their roster composition, it was a bunch of leftover pieces plus let's throw in Kemba Walker and a bunch of rookies. That's what the next 6 months are for right now. It's to figure out who your big man rotation is, if you need an upgrade there, and it's to figure out who on the bench is going to score, who among the rookies is going to step forward. If not, around the trade deadline, you're sniffing around for a professional basketball player, an Alec Burks type, perhaps.
Yes.
Someone who's been around for a while and can step into a role, and that's what you use the regular season for. But thank God you have guys who want to play together who have that immense talent you mentioned.
This season is your dream, Sean Silver, because it's going to prove just how valuable and important Al Horford was to the Celtics team. Because if you put Al Horford on the Celtics team, to me, they're clearly the best team.
They're unstoppable.
They definitely would.
I mean, you know, so this, you, Sean Silver, were the most ardent defender of the Al Horford fan club. I will never forget your 3-hour argument with Mike Flynn over Al Horford. Still some of the best radio in the 10-year history of this radio station. You have written love letters to Al Horford at 98.5thesportshub.com. This season is going to prove you not just right, Sean Silver, but the most right.
Well, here's the thing, too. It's not necessarily the season because of all the reasons that Chris enumerated. They're a well-prepared regular season team. They're going to win a lot of games, and people are going to say, oh, the Celtics were fine without Al Horford. The playoffs is the proving ground. It absolutely is. And for all the people who are down on the Philadelphia 76ers now, and for all the Philly fans, oh, I hate you people so much. I could do 3 hours on you, who are taking it to Al Horford right now and saying he is the reason that the Sixers are losing?
No.
Come on. But that's again, regular season is time for overreactions. The playoff is where you make the play.
I'll just say this quickly, too. What I'm intrigued about with the Celtics team now is, I'm not going to say I saw this coming, but I did think that they would respond better when the expectations were removed, which obviously happened this year. I think they had lowered expectations. All right, now the expectations have been elevated again. Everybody's looking at you and saying, you are a championship contender. People are ready to say that you are the team in the East. How do you respond? How do you respond now that you're not sort of doubted in the underdog, that you're sort of back in the role you were at the beginning of last year where everybody's saying you're one of the best teams in the league and you should make the finals?
I'll say this. This Celtics season has been thoroughly enjoyable so far. And last season was a tractor pull and it was a slog. And even early on, you realized how dislikable that team had become. I grew to really dislike and I felt, you know, real disdain for the Boston Celtics last year. I've totally flipped. I mean, this is a complete 180, or as Paul Pierce would say, a complete 360. This has been a very enjoyable thing, and I think there are a lot of things to really like with the Celtics moving forward. 617-779-0985. I see you waiting patiently on the phone lines. I'm sorry we've neglected you. We will get to you coming up next after we get a update from Sean Silver, Sports of Headlines.
Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtic Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It is the Sports Hub Celtic Show. No big Jim Murray today. Matt McCarthy filling in. We've got Chris Gasper alongside Sean Silver and Brian Robb as well. 617-779-0985. Let's go to Paul in Somerville. Hey, Paul.
Hey, what's up, guys? I understand why there'd be concern about the wing situation, considering what happened last year. But I think it's important to remember that not only is Kyrie gone, Terry Rozier is gone, Marcus Morris is gone, and Sean Silver, I hate to do this to you, but Al Horford is also gone. That's a lot of shot attempts that aren't there anymore. They've been replaced by guys like Tice and Grant Williams, who aren't going to shoot the ball as much. It's allowing these guys to have the room to operate. And once Hayward comes back, Brad's going to be able to stagger the rotations to have two of those guys on the court at the time. All the time, especially to help the bench.
Yeah, Paul, I do think there will be an issue, though. I mean, there still is only one basketball to go around. And when Gordon Hayward comes back, you know, they're going to have to figure something out here. Does Marcus Smart go back to the bench, even though he's been, I think, excellent in the starting lineup?
I do, too. And he was excellent in the starting lineup last year as well.
Right. Is there a natural fit for, you know, Jaylen Brown to go to the bench, or do you want to put Gordon Hayward there? And you certainly wouldn't want to put him there with the way that he was playing to start the season. I suppose it, you know, this falls under the good problem to have category, but they still do need to figure out these rotations. They're going to need to figure out the starting lineup, and they're going to need to figure out a best fit so that they don't fall into the same issues that they had last year with only one basketball to go around and too many Mavs to feed. They're not out of the woods yet totally on that. At least I don't think so. What do you guys think?
I don't think they are either. You know, I don't think it will be as big an issue as last year, but again, sure. I think I need to see it. And I just think that there are some Celtics fans who are just sort of assuming that this will be like no big deal. And maybe they're right and I'm wrong. But I mean, we really haven't seen it yet. I mean, again, I mentioned that Charlotte game, you know, they played pretty well, but it's like Kemba was 4 of 12. He wasn't having like a great night. Jaylen Brown took 9 shots, was very efficient. I think Marcus Smart needs to be in the starting lineup because I think he adds a different element and I think it helps Kemba Walker. To the caller's point, I will say this. Maybe we do get a little too hung up on who starts and who doesn't because, yes, Brad can stagger the rotation so that one of those wing guys is the primary scorer with the bench group. That's not that difficult to do. But it's what's the response to not being in the starting lineup. For example, I would say Jaylen Brown is probably the guy that I would look at the most to come off the bench. How does he respond to that? You know, is that something that bothers him? Is it something that takes away from his game? Does he feel like I should be in the starting lineup no matter what? because this was an issue last year, and I hate to break it to you, it wasn't all Kyrie.
Right.
And I know this, people over there have told me, you know, it wasn't all Kyrie, that the young guys didn't like being criticized at times and also weren't really eager to accept roles, that there was some friction between the young wings and Gordon Hayward. And when Gordon wasn't playing well, it's like, well, why is this guy getting minutes, basically, like, no matter what? So this still all has to be sorted out. Now, winning is the ultimate deodorant. It fixes everything. They're winning right now. But at some point, you're not going to be on a 10, 11-game winning streak. And someone's going to have to accept a role that maybe is not their idealized role.
4 to 6 weeks from now, they're going to essentially go through the same issue that they went through last year when Gordon Hayward returns, obviously on a much smaller scale, because you anticipate that Gordon Hayward will be hopefully close to what we saw, or even exactly what we saw, you know, in the first, you know, a few weeks of the season. But somebody is going to have to sacrifice on this team, and are they willing to sacrifice? And to me, Jaylen Brown is the most likely and logical candidate to go to the bench, because I'm with you, Chris. I think this team is better with Marcus Smart in the starting lineup, because Marcus Smart can impact the game without having, you know, he does not require the ball.
He can impact the game without scoring.
So if you put Brown, Tatum, Hayward, and Kemba Walker on the floor, is that your best way to go? Because all of those guys need the ball in some way, shape, or form. Marcus Smart doesn't. Marcus Smart, you know, doesn't need the ball as much as those guys to impact the game. I think their best lineup would be putting Jaylen Brown in the bench. What do you guys make of this? B-Rob, you and I were just talking about this off the air. I mean, what do you make of this situation?
Yeah, so I'm with you guys in terms of what makes the most sense from a practicality standpoint and getting the shots to different guys and maximizing your lineups. But I did talk to Marcus Smart about this before the season, and he kind of insinuated that, hey, like, it doesn't matter to me at all if I come off the bench or start. Jaylen Brown, he feels like it's just more comfortable starting. Like, he's just, that's like a role he is more maximized and feels better about, which we saw him thrive in, obviously, 2 years ago and again this year. So given that, and given the fact that Brad Stevens just loves to have Smart off the bench as a weapon whenever he can, like, it might just be a situation where, as long as the going is good here, I think Smart goes back to the bench.
And Smart off the bench as a weapon has a way to impact some of these younger players who are coming along. Smart's ability as a playmaker, I would say, you know, he has the highest ceiling as a playmaker of any of the players on the Celtics, and they got some great passers. So not only his ability to score, I mean, you might say, okay, coming out the bench, Marcus Smart might get some more defenders thrown at him, which might impact that sterling three-point percentage that he's rocking right now. But the way that he can impact the game defensively, the way that he can set up his other teammates, maybe he can get Carson Edwards, say, into a comfortable rhythm as a regular NBA contributor, get easy shots for, you know, a Grant Williams or, you know, one of these bigs coming off the bench. Things like that you also have to consider as well. Also, you know, this is a redo for the players. You know, it didn't work last year, but, you know, they had the opportunity to make it work this year. It's also a redo for Brad. And I'll credit Danny Ainge for doing his part in the offseason, because by giving Jaylen Brown that extension, that keeps Jaylen Brown
sure
from becoming an issue. Because, you know, and this is not a knock on Jaylen Brown, you know, from a personality standpoint, but any man who is in his restricted free agency year, who's going to see potentially his touches limited, he's going to blanch at that. And
right,
by re-signing Brown, giving him the money, that takes that out of the picture.
Right. Does that make him more likely or more willing to go to the bench and say, hey, you know what? I got my money. I'm not playing for as much as I once was, at least from a financial standpoint this year. Sure, I'll be the sixth man. I'll be, you know, the go-to guy, that, you know, the lead scorer off the bench, because that is an issue for this team. And if Marcus Smart is the guy to go back to the bench, can you count on him being your scoring impact? And he's given them a scoring impact this year. We talked about, you know, the 3-point shots he hit, what, 4 or 5 last night. He's had a big impact on this team, at least from beyond the arc. B-Rob, you and I were talking about whether or not this was sustainable for Marcus Smart. You seem to think that it is, and let's just say it is, that's fine, but is he still enough of a scorer to be your primary scorer off the bench?
I don't think so. He's reliable enough to be your outside shooter, to spread the floor. I still think, if nothing else, you know, you talked about a lot, Matt, about just like having championship-level talent in this roster. You still, this for me, this winning streak is convincing, okay, Danny Ainge, you still have assets here, and this team is good enough to use those assets to bolster the bench in a month or two when, you know, December 15th rolls around and free agents are eligible to be traded. So that's the biggest thing for me there. So I expect him. I don't know who that guy is yet. I don't know even what position makes the most sense from that standpoint. But to me, you add another scorer or just an all-around versatile guy to put Smart on that bench, take the pressure off the young guys even less, and then you have a rotation here that can really go head-to-head with the heavyweights in the East.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the six-man thing to me is that I sort of feel like, given the history of the organization, they should be able to sell this role to Jaylen Brown. I mean, you're talking about the term six-man. It was invented by Red Auerbach, and you had Frank Ramsey and John Havlicek and Kevin McHale and Cedric Maxwell. There are all Bill Walton, who have filled this role and filled it admirably, and guys that maybe started the game on the bench but ended up finishing the game. And I still feel like there should be a way to sort of sell that to these guys and understand that, you know, look, the history of the Celtics, it's all around you when you play for the Celtics. I still feel there should be some way to sort of sell this and make somebody here understand that for this team to maximize, this is what makes the most sense. And also just look at somebody like Lou Williams. Like, there are guys in the history of the league, Jason Terry, Lou Williams, who have come off the bench, been great six men, and they still get to finish the game and they still get a ton of notoriety. Like, you can be a real weapon in that role. And
Manu.
Yeah, Manu is a perfect example.
Manu's another great one.
And
Hall of Famer.
You would know this better than I, Chris. I mean, but Jaylen Brown seems like the type of person that you could sell on that role. He's a bright kid. He's a student of the game. He's got his money. He's got his money, and that helps. I don't know. I think you could sell him on that, couldn't you, theoretically?
I would hope so, but to B. Rob's point, like, you know, if Jaylen's just more comfortable starting, if that's sort of what gets his juices flowing and it's easier for him to get into the flow of the game, then, you know, human nature is human nature, right? You kind of can't control that. But I do think it's something that's worth at least experimenting with. I think we're still in the experimentation portion of the season, and I think once Hayward comes back, it's something that I think it's worth at least giving it a shot just to see. Because I think it would make a lot of sense, and this is just my opinion here, but ultimately I think it's how you maximize the talent on this team.
617-779-0985. So I'm new on this show, and I get to fill in for Big Jim Murray here. And for some reason, I feel emboldened to break away from the normal final segment of the Celtics program, the Celtics show, 98.5 The Sports Up. I'm sure I'm breaking just about every contract rule we have here, and maybe I'll get an angry email or something from my higher-ups, but I'm willing to risk it. We're going to go back to the Celtics after the 1 o'clock changeover here. But Chris Casper has to leave today. He has to go to Philadelphia. I want to do 5 questions with Chris Casper. We're going to do that. Then we're going to go back to the Celtics. And if I'm breaking a whole bunch of contracts and, you know, angering people, and, well, I don't know, maybe I'll get fired. And I'm sure people would be happy about that. 617-779-0985. We'll get 5 questions with Chris Casper, then back to the Celtics right after this.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Casper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I got 5 questions for Chris Casper of the Globe. I got 5 questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got 5 questions.
5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I got 5 questions. I hope this segment ain't too wild.
All right, so I didn't receive any texts like, what the hell are you doing? Don't break the sports radio bylaws and go away from the Celtics show. You're violating our contracts. I didn't get any angry texts, which either means A, this is okay, or B, they're not listening and I'll just be fired after the show for doing this. It's Matt McCarthy filling in for Big Jim Murray. Chris Casper needs to leave at 1 o'clock today. He needs to get on a train down to Philadelphia. So we're going to do 5 questions here, normally closing the show, but we'll go back to the Celtics right after this. Please don't fire me. Please don't fire me for doing this. But I want to do this, even though this segment is really more about Jim. But I want to make this segment about you today,
Oh,
Chris.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's rare on this show.
Maybe. We'll see what we can do. Question number 1. When you load the dishwasher, do you put the forks in upside down, meaning the handles would be facing up and the fork tines would be facing down?
I do. I do put it. I have the handle facing up and the tines are down. Yes.
I can't. My dishwasher does not allow that.
Oh, really?
You know, it's got little fitted slots that you are essentially forced to put the forks facing up. And it bothers me because you're forced to put the knives facing down. Now, you should always put the knives facing down. You know, safety here, folks. Let's not slice our hands.
but the forks are required in my dishwasher because of this stupid little thing to face up, and it bothers me to no end.
I don't like that. I put a lot of times I put the spoons up.
Yeah, but I can see that. I'll accept it.
Yeah.
I can definitely accept it.
Sometimes spoons, I feel like they get a better rinse.
Yeah, the spoons can go either way. But no, mine are also forced to go facing up, too, in this stupid dishwasher that I have.
Interesting.
I hate it. Huh. God. Question number two.
That was easy, that first one.
If you could step into a time machine, where would you go?
We had this, you know, this is not where I would really go, but because we had this conversation, I had it yesterday with Felger, and it was the most pop culture knowledge that he's ever displayed.
He has pop culture
he
knowledge?
He does. I would want to go
from
back.
From way back when.
I would want to go back, use a time machine to go back to Phoebe Cates, circa Fast Times at Ridgemont High, just to see what was it like at that time when she was throwing 105. That's not really what I would do, but Felger and I had this conversation. It's so rare to engage him on a pop culture level, and he was totally, I mean, he was like quoting lines out of that movie, which is not a Felger thing. So I'm going to go with that for today.
That is the antithesis of a Mike Felger moment. Like, I'm convinced he has never seen anything outside of his sporting
event. I know, it's shocking.
He's never seen a movie.
It's shocking.
And I asked him, what's your favorite movie? Oh, you know, I kind of like The Godfather. And I started quoting some stuff, and he didn't really play along. I'm like, come on, man. What the hell is wrong with you? I would go back. I'm a Civil War buff. I'd go back to Appomattox or Gettysburg or, you know, something like that. Gettysburg Address, not be there for the actual battle itself.
For the slaughter?
No. I can take a hard pass.
Yeah, I have to be honest.
Slaughter.
For someone like me, going back in time and going back in history is fraught with a lot of peril.
Right.
So the Civil War would not be my choice. I wouldn't mind going back, and this would still not be great for me, but just the 60s to sort of see, like, the tumult and the space race and all that stuff, because I am into that stuff.
Do you have a sports moment that you'd want to go back to? Because mine, I would go back and relive a Pedro Martinez start. I would just go and be at Fenway Park.
I know what
and
my
experience
one is.
The height of that,
I know what
just
my
to relive it.
I can't say like a specific game, but I would want to go back in time and be able to watch an entire season of Bill Russell playing for the Celtics, because I never got to see that, and just his impact is kind of unparalleled. But it's really hard to put in context in today's game, like how he was able to do what he did. So I would love to go back in time and just watch him.
All right, question number three: when you fly, do you recline your seat?
Don't say that.
Take that back.
I do just a little bit. I don't.
No. All right. No. You should never ever recline your seat on an airplane. All right. When I am the ruler
I'm
of the universe.
5'8".
When I am the and you know who's sitting behind you? 6'6" Matt McCarthy, who's getting screwed because you're putting your seat back
McCarthy,
just a little bit.
I'm nowhere near you. I've been upgraded to Comfort Plus or Economy Comfort or whatever they're calling it. So I have extra leg room. So does the person behind me normally. So you don't have to worry about me. It's the other people in the cattle class that you have to worry about.
You are infringing upon my purchased area. I purchased my seat and the seat and the area for my legs in front of me. If you put your seat back on an airplane, you are the worst person alive. Okay? All right. When I am ruler of the universe.
Okay.
If you put your seat back on an airplane, one decade of hard labor for every hour of the flight.
But you do realize, like, again, you know, this is not NASA and the Saturn V rocket. Like, do you realize how, like, upright those seats are in the upright and locked position?
Yeah, exactly. Stay that way. Think of the people behind you. Think of the tall, unfortunate people behind you.
Matt, is it okay?
Just pay for the upgrade.
Is it okay that I always look for my fellow man? I put it back, but I put it back if it's a child, a small woman, etc. If it's someone who looks reasonably tall, no way I'm putting it back.
If you're talking about a person who is even average in height or above, you should never do it.
I scout it out.
Small child, you see, that's why you're a good person, Sean Silver. And we just found out that Chris Gasper is a terrible person. And here he is being a classist. Well, why don't you pay for the extra seat?
Yeah,
Chris,
pay for the extra.
You think I can pay the extra $100 on the flight?
You do a lot of shifts here.
It's true. You know, if they give me more shifts, then I'll start upgrading to Chris Gasper.
I've been led to believe that this is all just spending money for you. This is not like your actual livelihood.
This is my actual job for right now. We will see. I don't have anything else.
This is like
don't
Christmas have money. You know, the girlfriend's going to get a big gift. Like, you're just doing this. This is like money on the side.
Question number four. What is your best hangover cure?
Ooh, best hangover cure. I'm not a big drinker, so I really don't have one.
Bacon, egg, and cheese. Greasy bacon, egg, and cheese. You can't beat that.
Yeah, you and Jim agree on that. You guys agree on that.
You gotta soak it up.
Just thinking about being... I mean, honestly, my best hangover cure when I was a drinker in college was vomiting. I mean, that was it. Like, that's it. Let it out.
Always a good approach.
Puke and rally.
Question number five. I know you need to go. What's the worst Thanksgiving dish?
Worst Thanksgiving dish. You know, I'm not a fan. I don't like people who try and make the cranberry sauce. Give it to me right out of the can and stick it in my veins.
This is easy.
I love canned cranberry sauce.
100% easy. It's turkey. The most overrated of all the foods.
Oh, this is
turkey.
Un-American.
Turkey is worthless. It is tasteless. It is bland. It's almost as worthless as its lousy cousin, chicken. Out on poultry. Oh. Out on turkey. Turkey is a vessel for the stuffing. That's all it's good for.
The stuffing
is the best part.
Stuffing, that's like eating a manila folder.
Stuffing is the best.
I'm not a big stuffing fan.
Chris, you know, I've found in this last 5-6 minutes, I used to really like you.
Yeah.
And now, I'm kind of glad you're
leaving.
Well,
now I'm going to find, now that you're on this flight to Philly tonight, I'm going to switch my train to your flight. I'm going to go dig in and get the turkey Thanksgiving meal. And I'm going to recline that seat all the way back. As I eat that turkey with the gravy on top, just that smell just carrying throughout the entire cabin as I recline all the way for the seat in front of you.
9:30 JetBlue, Chris Gasper. I dare you.
Oh, come on. You're complaining about JetBlue. There's a ton of leg room on that. Someone can recline and you're not in danger.
Look at me, Chris. I'm 6'5". How am I supposed to live like a normal person?
You just said you were 6'6 a minute ago.
I'm 6'5", 6'6".
I'm changing your argument here, man.
I'm somewhere in there. I have to fly JetBlue. There's no other way. There is no other way.
You.
But enjoy the train down to Philadelphia, Chris. Maybe I'll see you tomorrow.
Saves a lot of money. Saving the company some dough.
There you go. All right, Chris Gasper, off to Philadelphia. It's been fun. Really appreciate
it. This was great, Matt. I appreciate
it, man. 90 seconds, no commercials here. We'll get back into the Celtics, so hopefully they don't fire me for not talking Celtics for the last 5 or 6 minutes. Sean Silver will get you updated, and we'll continue the Celtics discussion. Silver and I are going to take you up until 2:30. Chris is off. 617-779-0985. No commercials here, just the headlines.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper.
Hey, Murray.
Gasper.
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper.
Hey, Murray.
Gasper.
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
It is Gasper and Murray, except there's no Gasper and there's no Murray. It's Matt McCarthy, Sean Silver taking you up until 2:30, 617-779-0985. Jim's already in Philadelphia. Chris is off to Philadelphia. I hope people on the Amtrak kick him on the way down. Kick the back of that seat.
That's not nice.
As he tries to recline it. A lot of support on Twitter for me, Sean Silver. A lot of support. Don't recline your seat on an airplane. The people side with me on this one.
Chris is in business class or whatever it's called. Whatever they call it. Economy plus. He's got the extra room to work with. I can appreciate that. I am too cheap to ever sit in that class.
You and me both.
You know, I'm gonna sit there with my 6'4" knees jammed up against some tray table and have some idiot in front of me just slam themselves back onto me. But I won't protest. You know, it's a free country. However, I myself, because I am a nice guy, I always check before I recline.
Very important. So 617-779-0985. You and Chris were talking a little bit off the air about Marcus Smart.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've had this discussion. Should he stay in the starting lineup? Should he move to the bench? The stats, and Chris found these stats, and they're awesome. They're great. The stats will indicate to you, Sean Silver, that Marcus Smart, his shooting percentage is significantly better in the starting lineup compared to the bench. Now, I need to dig these up. I know you two were talking about them. I'll find the specific stats. But it's pretty noteworthy, and it's pretty notable how much better his shooting percentage, at least this year, and it's a small sample size, so at least take it with a grain of salt.
Right.
His shooting percentage is better in the starting lineup than it is on the bench. And you guys were talking off the air about how it's almost like Marcus feels that he's a little bit more responsible for scoring the basketball when he's coming off the bench, and he doesn't feel as compelled, you know, to shoot and to be the man when he's in the starting lineup. So he's taking better shots and having better results.
Mm-hmm. Well, when he's on the bench, I mean, obviously he does. He's the longest tenured Celtic, for one. He's a guy who obviously feels a leadership role in this team, you know, so much so that people call the station all the time asking about whether or not Marcus Smart, why he isn't the captain of the team right now. Now, you look at him off the bench, and he's obviously going to see himself as the leader there. He kind of has to be the leader there because you don't have an established consistent scoring option. I mean, for God's sakes, Danny Ainge, or not Danny Ainge, Brad Stevens is the coach of the team. He's been handing out, you know, 18, 20. He had a season-high 21 minutes the other night for Brad Wanamaker, who's, you know, not certainly not a proven NBA guy, but a guy that he feels can kind of stabilize that second unit. And for God's sakes, it's Brad Wanamaker who's the leader of your bench right now. He's doing a pretty decent job. Smart in the starting lineup. He still has those shots where it's just kind of like, I would much prefer if Jason Tatum was taking that shot to you, Marcus Smart. But the numbers don't lie as far as the productivity. And Chris got him real quick. I'm not as much of a basketball reference whiz. I'm on that website a lot. But for some reason, I don't really know how to use the tools super effectively. Or maybe Chris, because he's Chris Gasper, maybe he pays for a premium membership.
Fancy connection.
You know,
somewhere.
Maybe he does that much like he does with his airplane flights. So, but either way, he dug up this stat that Smart, I believe, if I remember the numbers that he spoke to me, is shooting about 35% off the bench and 31% from downtown. When you put him in the starting lineup, he's about 15% better from behind the arc, which, you know, that takes you from being a very, very good long-distance shooter in the NBA to a guy that's barely sustainable, basically to the guy that he was before last season when he turned his whole game around as an outside shooter.
Well, and B-Rob and I were talking about this a few minutes ago off the air. You know, it seems like there have been fewer and fewer no moments. You know, the first 4 or 5 years of Marcus Smart's career, you could hear the garden groan every
Absolutely.
Time he put one up. If you put him in the starting lineup, that's less acceptable because, you know, it's got to be a good shot for you. Otherwise, you're taking the ball away from Tatum, from Brown, from Hayward, from Walker, whatever the situation, whatever the, you know, the lineup may be. He won't feel as compelled to take those shots, theoretically, right?
No question. I mean, that's when you have that much talent around them, you feel less of a weight to take them anyway. And I honestly think, guys, we've just kind of seen Smart, you know, he's grown up in front of our eyes here in terms of how smart he is as a player on the offensive end of the floor. He knows his spots, and it's a crazy number. Guess what percentage of his shots, total shots, are three-pointers, like percentage-wise?
I'm going to say quite a bit. Close to 50, somewhere around there.
70% this year.
Whoa! Wow.
So that's literally pretty much all he's taking. 3 out of every 4 shots is a three. And that's like the kind of thing that like J.J. Redick and Kyle Korver, that's like the volume of shots that they take are three. So not that he's obviously anything close to those kind of a shooters yet, but he's being much smarter about the types of shot he's taking, and it's helping the offense.
Yeah, I've noticed a growing up factor with Marcus Smart, really, in the last, I don't know, you know, say year or so. I find myself having fewer and fewer of those, oh God, no, what are you doing moments.
And it's amazing to think that Marcus Smart's game would look like this at this point. Obviously, it's going the way of the rest of the NBA, as just everybody, including Brooke Lopez and probably Brooke Lopez's grandmother, if she could get out on the court, would be hoisting up three-point shots as well. But, you know, you remember Marcus Smart, and maybe this was part of it. Marcus Smart, as a college player, would go to the rack. He would get to the line. He was, you know, he would penetrate. He would set people up off of those drives. He wasn't really a comfortable shooter. And you're able to do that in college. Then when you get to the NBA and the trees are a little bit taller, the forest is a little more compact, it's tougher to weave in there and get those shots off. So, you know, the first several years of his career, we just kind of saw that transition to where, you know, maybe some of it was coached, maybe some of it was a realization that his game needed to change. But he's become, I guess, this, from an analytics standpoint, he's become a prototypical, you know, hyper-efficient, I'm taking threes and layups kind of NBA player now, and not, you know, the long twos. And the fact of the matter is he's actually converting on those three-point shots, which is probably the most important thing that you need if you're going to be an effective three-point shooter, that you actually make them.
617-779-0985. We can continue to take your thoughts on the Celtics. Marcus Smart, what do they do when Gordon Hayward comes back? What do you make of this start for this team? 10-1, best record in the NBA. We can continue to take your thoughts on that all the way up until 2:30. Matt McCarthy and Sean Silver in for Gasper and Murray today, taking you up until Notre Dame football at 2:30. But I also want to get into the MLB scandal, the Astros scandal this week, with the sign stealing and the Red Sox connections to it, and Alex Cora's connections to it, because this story is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. I think one of the great scandals in sports that we've seen in quite some time. Let's get into that next. It's Matt McCarthy, Sean Silver, in for Gasper and Murray here today, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Come. It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem?
No match for a little DIY duct tape.
Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... Ah, dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape than a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah! On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with a solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.